sir? Where's your sword? And you? Where's your helmet? You? And you? What kind of army is this? Oh, how I miss my world. I was a Roman legionnaire, the centurion. Most important man on the field of battle, leading 100 soldiers. Our job was to hold our defenses and to break theirs. As the saying goes, sic centurio, sic punitur. So goes the centurion. So goes the battle. I used to be a soldier until I became a soldier for Christ. What you believe about Jesus the Christ depends on what you believe about anything. Do you believe in the love of power or the power of love? Do you believe in having just rights or the right of justice? Do you believe that mercy is something that has to be deserved or that in the deserving it ceases to be mercy? Do you believe that truth is what you make it or that there's a truth that makes you? If you believe in justice and truth and mercy and love, then you believe in Jesus the Christ, just as I came to believe in him. My name is Petronius. I was a member of the Roman Legion, stationed in Judea under Pontius Pilate, prefect of Caesarea, and loyal subject of his divine sonship, Emperor Augustus. It is a strange thing for me, above all people, to say, I believe in Jesus, since I'm the man who crucified him. Imagine that coming up in a job interview. What great thing have you done with your life? Oh, I crucified the Savior of the world. Well then, thanks for coming in. But when you know that you shared in the nailing of the nails, it gives you a responsibility to decide what you think of this man. It starts with thinking. What is your favorite Latin phrase? I have several. Esse quam verde, to be rather than to seem. Ad augusta, ad angusta, through difficulty, to honor. And my favorite, veni, vidi, vici, I came, I saw, I conquered. What is your favorite Latin phrase? You do know Latin, right? How many of you know Latin? Raise your hand. Oh, great Jupiter. If you do not have your hand in the air, you should be lined up and executed immediately. Latin is the basis of all the languages of the Western world. In spite of what the Gauls did to it. Galling, to be sure. And don't get me started on the Anglo-Saxons. English, certainly a language for common people. But its saving grace is its foundation, is Latin. Latin is not just a language. Latin teaches you how to think. It teaches you how to reason. It teaches you how to rationalize. Right thinking leads to right living. And to ask what is right living is to ask, why am I living? And that is a question that is the property of faith. And faith changes everything. But it starts with thinking, which takes me back to his cross. I've crucified many a man. I seldom look at them. But on the occasions I have, when I see their eyes, I see rage. I see hatred, pure hatred. And honestly, it makes my job easier. But when I crucified Jesus of Nazareth, and I looked into his eyes, I didn't see rage. I didn't see hatred. What I saw was sympatheo, sympathy, compassion. And I thought, why is he here? I needed to rationalize and to make sense of what was going on and what was happening around me. That's not just what my language taught me, it's what my military training taught me. A centurion is the highest ranking officer on the field with the people. When you get above me to the commanders and the generals, they're no longer with the people. They sit in rooms in politic. But the centurion must understand the people. And when you understand the people, the less you have to use this. Ten years ago, I came to Judea, knowing little about the people, only what I was told, that they were obstinate, they were difficult. And I found that to be true. But the more I learned about them, the less I understood that their obstinance was from a defiance of spirit. Their obstinance came from their faith. They're a strange lot. They believe in one God, a creator of the heavens and the earth, who rules over the universe and stamps his image upon people. And they believe that by divine right, they are to inherit that land and reveal the will of that God. To someone like me, that is a strange idea. I come from a place where one worships all the gods he can, because you need the favor of the gods. That's why you worship them. You worship them to guarantee you health and long life and success and power. If you please the gods, they will be on your side. The patron gods of soldiers are Mars and Mithras. Mars is the god of war. No soldier goes into battle without an idol of Mars. You never leave home without it. Mithras represents loyalty to the emperor. Mithras is the bull god. You worship Mithras by sacrificing a bull on a high platform, and initiates walk underneath it so that the blood pours down upon you, because the strength of the creature is in its blood. And when you partake in the blood, you partake in its strength. The nature of the creature is in the blood. So the idea of worshiping one God, that is an oddity. But their beliefs are odder still. They believe that this one God reveals himself to the people. That centuries ago, Moses came and brought them the law that came from God, a law that called for restraint, that put boundaries on their freedoms. We worship our gods in just the opposite manner. They believe that this God sent prophets to rebuke the people. What religion makes people feel remorseful? And they believe that one day this God would send an anointed one, one who would perfectly represent the will of this God and liberate God's people. And that belief is what involves me. Because this one would be known as a divine son. And my job by oath is to represent the sovereignty of the empire Caesar, who is the divine son of the gods. Over my time in Judea, many had come along claiming to be this anointed one. They would rally people around them and try to lead a revolt, and every time be put down and the leaders executed. So to be informed that I would be involved in a case of another seditionist was not unusual. In cases where it's believed that what the result will be is execution, a centurion is appointed when the person is even first put on trial. So I was standing next to the person on trial, Jesus of Nazareth. There were many unusual features of this case. First of all, it was being overseen by the governor. Secondly, the people bringing the charges of sedition were not Romans. They were his own religious leaders. When did they ever care about the sovereignty of the empire? And third, he was silent. The governor tried to give him every opportunity to go free, but he would not take it. He flat out asked him, "Are you a king? Are you a threat to Roman authority?" Why would someone being accused of being a king not say no unless that one believed he was? But he remained silent as stone. When the governor washed his hands of the whole matter, the crowd cheered and he turned to me and said, "He's yours." My men took him to the courtyard inside the Antonia Fortress, where they stripped him and flogged him, and then, as they do in such cases, they humiliated him and tortured him further. You do things like this long enough, you believe it's for emperor and empire. You believe you have a right and a responsibility and that you're serving some kind of good, but you do it long enough, something inside of you dies. When they put his crossbeam on him and we set out, he was barely able to stand. He didn't make it halfway before he fell and could not get back up. We conscripted a man from the crowd to carry that beam the rest of the way to the execution site, and when we got there, we laid him down on the ground with his arms stretched out across the beam. This form of execution is called crucifixion. It is reserved for those who pose the greatest threat to Roman authority. It goes back 100 years to Spartacus and the slave revolt, when 100 plus men were crucified along the Appian Way to send a signal to the public, think twice, think twice. First, your arms are tied at the elbow to the beam, and then your hands are nailed. And then the beam is hoisted against a post in the ground until your feet are off the ground. Once the beam is affixed to the post, the ankles are taken and they are affixed to the post. The reason for this is that the purpose of crucifixion is not death alone, it's torture. It's to put death off as long as possible. What kills you is not being able to breathe, suffocation, because the weight of the body pulls down until eventually you no longer have the strength to take air in. The only way would be to push your legs up so that you could breathe, but the pain would be too excruciating. I tell you these details because of something I will tell you in just a moment. What you need to know now is what was happening during this entire time. From the moment we set out from the fortress, there was an eclipse. The sun was blotted out. Darkness. Many people believe that such signs are associated with the death of a great person, like Julius Caesar. When the day Julius Caesar died, the sky became black in the middle of the day. And there are many who say that such signs portend the death of a son of God. Religious leaders came and stood beneath him, and they taunted him. Why? They had already gotten their way. The man would be dead within a few hours. Why do they need to taunt him? But then he began to speak, barely above a whisper. But he was not returning the insult. He was praying in Aramaic, "Abba, Father, forgive them." Who does that? Who prays to forgive your enemies who would do such a thing to you? Within an hour, his breathing became so labored, we didn't expect to be there much longer. And he said in a whisper what I assumed were his last words, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani." It speaks of being forsaken by God. And I felt pity. Because eventually, we all are forsaken by the gods. That day will come to every person when one day the prospect of longer life is no longer there. The prospect of health is not possible. The prospect of power and success and wealth will belong to someone else. One day the gods will all turn their back on us. This was just his day. But what happened next changed my life. He shouted with a loud cry and then breathed his last. He shouted. At that moment, have you any idea what it would take to shout? The breath you would have to take in, your legs would have to stand so that you could even have enough breath to shout. The pain would be excruciating, it would be impossible, but he did it, and he shouted one word, a word hard to translate. It means finished, it means completed. It's the kind of word you might say after completing an arduous task that took you a long period of time, and you have completed it, and you might say, "Finished, I'm done. I'm through." Have you ever said that? It's what a soldier says. The moment in battle when you realize you've won, it's over, and you raise your sword and you scream, "Victory!" When he said that, I said, "Truly, this was the Son of God. I'm not even sure why." There was something faith-inspiring in that moment. That in the absolute lowest moment of human life, in utter agony, when everyone has deserted you and even your God, you cry out in victory, believing that vindication will happen even though you can't see vindication. Everybody wants a miracle from their gods. Everybody wants a miracle. But a miracle doesn't bring you to faith. Miracles sustain a faith that is already there. If you need a miracle to bring you to faith, you'll never have enough miracles. There'll always be one more sign you need. Always one more act of God for whatever problem you face. But a faith that with no sign of vindication still believes, That's a faith I want. I had to rationalize. I asked a religious leader about the phrase he used, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. He told me it's the first line in one of their psalms. So I studied it. And indeed, the writer begins speaking of abandonment by God. But the writer then says next, yet, O God, you are enthroned on the praises of Israel. And the psalm continues, believing without any sign of justification and vindication that God will come through. And it ends with these words, future generations will tell of the Lord. They will proclaim his righteousness, his vindication to a people yet unborn that he has done it. The writer talks about the future as if it's already happened. Some people look at the world and see all the reasons not to believe. The wars, the atrocities, the inhumanity to humanity. And they ask, where is God? But a faith that in the midst of such signs does not let go, but believes against belief, that is a faith that changes everything. Have you ever wanted to give up on God? Have you ever questioned where God is? When you hold on to a God who works not around suffering, but through it, you will have a faith that changes the world. And that is why I say Filius Day. Son of God.